You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. That sound is the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning, live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm Mike Blewett. I'm hosting today with George Kurtz, my compadre. So looking forward to a great show today. Obviously a lot going on in terms of the NFL draft. There's tons going on in terms of MLB recaps. I think we'll spend a lot of time on the draft today because it's still fresh in our minds. We're still looking to find out exactly how these pieces come together. But ultimately, we'll spend some time on MLB because there were some big performances last night. George, clearly a lot to go through. We'll continue to piece this together all the way through August. But, you know, the quarterback started to fall in place yesterday for perhaps some long-term solutions. We saw the Giants draft Davis Webb on Friday night. The Steelers draft Josh Dobbs yesterday. And we may see the beginnings of teams trying to put together a long-term strategy at that position.
Well, I don't know if I'll go that far. Once again, I think when you're not taking quarterback the first round, when you're drafting later, these quarterbacks generally don't work out. I mean, but I think it's a worthwhile take because you never know, they might. You know, you might get your Dak Prescott. You might catch a break like that. You might not. But I don't know if we're seeing, oh, my God, this is definitely the next quarterback after Eli Manning. I think the Giants just took their next Ryan to see. Maybe he works out. Maybe he doesn't. Yeah, but at least they have someone they can develop and find out. This is a strategy of the Green Bay Packers for years to be like this, and from that tree as well as all those coaches, where you draft not necessarily a first or second round, maybe not even a third round guy, but you draft the quarterback in most drafts to work them out. See if they can learn. Listen, fourth round picks, they don't have a high percentage of making the team anyway. So it's not a big deal if they don't make a team in a year or two. You move on. But if you develop them and they come into fruition, A, if you need a quarterback, great. If you don't, you can trade them for a pick that's more valuable than the way you drafted them.
True. Yeah, I think the Steelers probably feel some pressure in order to look down the road a little bit. I obviously, there's a few teams in that position. You could put the Chargers, the Giants, and the Steelers really all in the same boat. Quarterbacks are all the same age. But ultimately, I feel like the Steelers, with Ben's now flirtation with retirement, I feel like he is a guy where they are looking towards the end of this year, the end of next year, where Josh Dobbs might be somebody that it takes over. I tend to agree with you in general that they can't guarantee that a fourth round pick is going to be the quarterback of the future or the future franchise quarterback. But I think it's a risk worth taking for them and an upgrade potentially to somebody like Landry Jones.
Yeah, so I have no problem with it either. It's a strategy I would actually employ. I think it's a good one to use here. As for Roethlisberger, I know we had a lot of, he might retire. He's the biggest attention seeker I've ever seen. I mean, it's amazing what this guy wants. He needs this. I think he does it half this on purpose. I don't think you have any intention of ever retiring, but I want to throw it out there just to see what would happen.
I agree with you. I do think, though, it gives me some pause looking forward to 2018, 2019. I do think that the horizon is in front of them as opposed to him pulling a Favre and maybe flirting with retirement for four seasons in a row before actually retiring. And in fact, it might have been longer than that for Favre. But as you saw, all the quarterbacks go off. Mr. Irrelevant is Chad Kelly, the beleaguered Ole Miss quarterback. He was not invited to the combine. He's Jim Kelly's nephew. He did have a somewhat productive college career, but ultimately he's a guy that had some off-field issues and a guy that was not invited to the combine, but apparently with John Elway's help, with Jim Kelly's help, John Elway was able to get through to Chad Kelly and make him Mr. Irrelevant. So it's not necessarily fantasy. It doesn't have a lot of fantasy relevance, but I just thought it was interesting that he enlisted Jim Kelly, a former quarterback from his era, and picked up somebody that late.
What did he think Kelly was going to say? Oh, no, he's a bad kid. Terrible. Yeah. Don't take. I mean, like, a lot of this is just garbage. I mean, you ask somebody, like, what's he going to tell him? It's his nephew, I believe. So he's, of course, going to say good things about him. You know, oh, I made a mistake. Yeah. He's a good kid. He's all right. He'll, you know, he's doing whatever. So I don't know how much stock Elway would actually put into that. I think if Elway came out and said anything negative at all, Elway would have run to the hills and not take him in a million years. So I don't think that means all that much.
True. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some injury updates, both on the NFL side and the MLB side. Kind of important for us to go through a couple of major ones on the MLB side. So we'll do that. We'll continue to go through the draft and recap some big games last night from Major League Baseball. It's Mike and George for the next 2 hours on the Roto Experts in the Morning.
Welcome back. We're ready for this weekend morning show. I'm George Kurtz. Mike Fluid could be as well. And busy sports weekend this weekend. Yeah, we had baseball, of course. Week four here going on. The NFL draft has now completed. And the frenzy last night, right at the seventh round, is completed. All these teams trying to sign their free agents and get those guys in there, too. We have hockey playoffs, NBA playoffs. Just a really fun weekend going on here in the in the sports world. Baseball, the weather's heating up in the Northeast. We're seeing at Yankee Stadium, Bulls are flying out of here. And you're getting a lot of questions here. How many home runs can Aaron Judge hit? I mean, that guy doesn't need to, he doesn't even need to hit it well for it to go, you know, a mile out of the ballpark here. This is a guy who I think is going to hit 30-plus home runs, maybe even approach 40. My question will be, he's batting .301 right now. Yeah, I don't think he can keep that up. I think his batting average will probably slink more towards the 260 range here. But then again, we didn't draft him for batting average. We drafted him for the home runs, and I think that's going to come pretty easily here. The kid has made adjustments, and he looks good. So all looks well in Aaron Judge land. I know Mike Blewett said we want to get to some injuries here, and the first one that would come to mind, Adam Eaton. Gone for the season, torn ACL. This is a blow. It's probably more a blow for national owners than fantasy owners. So Adam Eaton's a nice player, but he's not someone that should be carrying your team. But gone for the season is still going to hurt the Nationals quite a bit here. We all know they acquired him in the big trade with Lucas Giolito was involved in the offseason. And now you're losing for the year. That's tough. And he is definitely out for the season. ACL, maybe there's a chance he could return in September or October, but that would seem highly unlikely. Adam Eaton is gone for the season. And fantasy owners are going to be asking themselves, all right, who's going to take his place on the Washington roster? Yeah, and that's an interesting question. They're not going to call up the number one prospect. All right, that doesn't seem like it's going to happen. So, unfortunate. We certainly wouldn't mind seeing Victor Robles called up, but he's also on the DL in the at AAA, but he's back probably on Tuesday, as far as the DL is concerned. But they're not going to call up Victor Robles. I guess they could eventually if, let's say, Michael Taylor fails. Chris Heisey's still on the team as well. So they could take a chance on calling him up here. But for now, it looks like, you know, maybe you want to take a shot at Taylor, but he's not going to really do you very good here. If Victor Robles is available in your league and you want to roll the dice here, okay, well, you got to figure they're going to give Taylor at least 3-4 weeks to fail and make sure that Super 2 passes as well. And then maybe Robles will get called up. And even then, that's iffy. Like I said, Robles is coming off an injury himself. So he's going to need to prove himself, one, healthy. And two, he's going to need to hit. Right? He's going to need to hit a AAA for them really to consider him. And that's something he was doing. It's actually a single A, by the way. And he's not AAA, is that? But you know, it would be a big jump. Bottom line is, I don't see him coming up. So if you're hoping Victor Robles is going to replace Adam Eaton, I don't think that's going to happen. My guess is eventually the Nationals will have to make another trade. You know, and we're hearing them now with rumors for the Nationals that they're going after, or at least they're inquiring about closers. And we all know in the offseason, David Robertson's name came up, and now the new name is Kelvin Herrera, the closer for the Royals. That would make some sense also. The Royals have pretty much imploded here in the early going this season. They're not a very good team. We're certainly not playing very well. So we would think that Herrera, you know, maybe even Eric Hosmer. I think the Royals would trade about anybody that's not nailed down. So Herrera does make some sense here. So we'll see how that brings us along. What do you think, Mike?
Sorry, we had a little bit of a technical issue, but nonetheless, I'm with you. The Orioles are Gosh, the Yankees just rolled over them the last 2 days. I heard a little bit about what you said about Judge. He's the one guy keeping my personal fantasy team afloat. Gardner hit two homers. I don't even know how that happens. But ultimately, the Yanks are, gosh, I mean, we didn't have any expectations for them this season. And this could be just a little bit of April magic. It doesn't mean anything necessarily long term, but they're playing as well as anybody.
Yanks are playing well. Now you and I are Yankee fans. I think I believe I said many times. I thought the best case scenario was to compete for the wild card, you know. But I think it was more important for the Yankees to develop the youngsters, and that's really going to be true this year and next. They're sort of rebuilding while not rebuilding, you know, while still trying to compete. That's generally tough to do at the major level. But we're seeing Aaron Judge look like a possible future star. Whatever Pedro Martinez did in the offseason with Luis Severino certainly seems to be working, as once again, he looks like the pitcher he was in 15, not 16. So if he can turn it around as well, then the Yankee future is brighter.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was this close, as I hold my fingers right next to one another, I was this close to picking up Severino in a league where he was available a couple of weeks ago. And I balked, and I'm regretting it. Now, obviously, it could be just a couple of good starts here. We might have some ups and downs, but I feel like I could have upgraded over somebody like Matt Moore or some other guys that I had the ability to move on from. Another and just going through some additional MLB news, I saw the news about Adam Eaton yesterday. Has a torn ACL, gone for the year. So a tough blow, obviously, for the Nats after acquiring him this offseason.
Yeah, we just talked about – that's what I just talked about before you got on. Rough blow. Yeah. He's gone for the season, torn ACL. The Nats, real quick recap, Michael Taylor's going to play center field. I don't think he's all that fantasy-worthy, not in 10 or 12-team leagues. My guess is you'll see the Nats inquiring about a center fielder and via trade. Victor Robles is the number one prospect, but he's on the DL himself. He's in single A. Like I said, maybe they could push him, but it certainly wouldn't be for another month till after the Super 2 deadline has passed. And like I said, that would be an extreme case here. I think the Nationals are going to check the trade market first to see if there's a center fielder out there. Because I don't think they want Bryce Harper playing center field every day either. You know, I think they realize that's not good for him. They would rather put him in the corner. So I think they'll check that market to see what's happening. And listen, you just talked about Brett Gardner. He could be a play in play here to go to Washington.
It's actually kind of interesting as the Yankees continue to rebuild. They obviously have some depth in the outfield. If they need a replacement like that, I actually like that call, George. He's not – look, as Yankee fans, we've gotten a chance to see him play every day. I think he's – in some ways I feel bad because he's a homegrown player, but for a lot of Yankees fans, I feel like he's worn out his welcome in a lot of ways. He's not always the smartest baseball player. He frustrates you a lot, but I think he's a very solid – outfielder for somebody that has a situation like this creep up, right? Where you need some depth in the outfield. He's a major league ready guy who can contribute in fits and starts, but not a bad piece when you have an injury go down if somebody's willing to deal him.
Well, we've heard the Yankees in the offseason, they were willing to deal Gardner. Though I don't think it's really an indictment of Gardner that the Yankees would trade him. I think it's more you said it, the Yankees have depth. And Hicks could play. He's not fantastic, but he could certainly play. They got Clint Frazier. You know, in a couple of years, you're going to have Rutherford. In other words, they don't need him. And I think if they could get a piece for him, a decent piece, they wouldn't give him away. If they get a decent piece for him, they would move him. That's why I bring up Gardner's name. That's because the Yankees would be willing to move him. He could play center field for Washington, lead off there. You know, he sort of takes the place of what Adam Eaton does. I guess the only catch there, and this is not even a big catch, would be that Gardner is signed for next year. But I don't believe Jason Worth is. So even next year when Eaton comes back, Gardner could easily slide over to left field and it'll still work out.
Right. So a couple other big pieces of news. Dodgers have a crazy win last night, down 5-2. They hit back-to-back-to-back homers, tie it up, and then walk it off in the same inning. Not a great outing for Hector Neris.
No, not at all. The Philadelphia closer situation is giving us a lot of stress, a lot of headaches. First, it's Gomez. He didn't get the job done. Then it's Benoit. He didn't get the job done. Now Neris is getting beat up, too. That's a problem for fantasy owners. A problem for Philadelphia as well. Probably a bigger problem for fantasy owners, whereas Philadelphia's not expecting to compete this year anyway. So it's a headache right now. It's not working out. Best case scenario, Neris figures it out, but I think they're going to play rotating, they feel the best man is for that day, who is the hot guy, and that's not going to make anyone any happier either. But I think Neres' hold on this job is getting a little slippery.
Yeah, a big outing last night for Carlos Gomez, George. He hasn't been off to a great start, but hits for the cycle last night. 4 for 4, 2 runs, 3 RBIs, the homer, obviously. So a nice outing here for Carlos Gomez, who's a guy, with, look, 2-3 years ago, he's at the top of draft boards. He slid quite a bit but off to a rough April, but hopefully this kickstarts what could be a solid season for somebody like Gomez.
Well, he has to be in a better spot, right? Playing in Texas, and that weather heats up. That ball's going to fly out of that park. Decent hitting lineup there. A cycle, I mean, it sounds good. It really is not as important as it sounds. Oh, he had a cycle. Yeah, big deal.
Yeah.
But it's a fun little thing. So you're right. He once was a first-round pick just 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Right, yep. In 15, we were all grabbing, and then he fell off the planet here. So maybe he is going to rebound somewhat still. I'm probably a sell high than a buy low on him.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, as you said, he is in the middle of a solid lineup. He hitting third yesterday. Mazzara, Odor, obviously off to a rough start. But Mazzara, Odor, we expect some of the guys like this to hit in this lineup at some point. I need Lucroy to get up from 206. He went 1 for 4 yesterday, raised his average. It's really not what you're looking for. So we'll continue to update you through MLB. I want to continue to obviously parse apart this NFL draft and look at some of the players that went yesterday. A really surprisingly low amount of quarterbacks, George. Only 10 taken overall. Sometimes you get the impression it's going to be a lot more than that, but teams will bring these guys in to work out as undrafted free agents and see if they can add depth at the position. So George and I will be back in a couple of minutes talking NFL draft and figure out how we can help your team for 2017. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Going through the NFL draft, we've got rounds 4 through 7 yesterday. Taking you all the way down to Mr. Irrelevant, which is a name that some people know, Chad Kelly. So, George, I don't know how you feel about what the Cowboys were able to do a little bit later in the draft. Obviously, we're going to go through team by team throughout the course of the next few months and probably really in the next week. But Cowboys really kept it to defense early. They went defense in a couple of corners. We picked up Ryan Switzer, wide receiver, 5'8", 181 out of North Carolina. He's, as they say on this write-up, he's a kind of a Cole Beasley clone. So they pick up a wide receiver there and a wide receiver late in the draft, but they stuck to defense, which I guess you probably anticipated on some level you'd hope they would do, but they really went hard on defense, picking up 7 new defensive players.
And that's what they had to. I mean, I don't think it's a shock, really, that they went that way, taking Taco Charlton, a defensive end, hopefully put some pressure on the quarterback. Chidobe Awuzie, another cornerback, Jordan Lewis, cornerback. You mentioned Switzer. Switzer will be the punt return guy. That's what they're using him for. The Cowboys have been pretty terrible on returns now for a few years, so they're hoping he'll add some life there. Xavier Woods, safety. Marquez White, cornerback. Joey Ivey, defensive tackle. Noah Brown, wide receiver, is an interesting play, but that's probably a long-term play. Dynasty guy you're looking at, not someone anywhere near this season. Cowboys are actually kind of, I don't want to use the word loaded, because I don't think these guys are great outside of Dez Bryant, but they have a lot of receivers, so I don't think Noah Brown is going to crack the starting group this year. I think it's going to be a practice squad player. And Jordan Carrell, another defensive tackle for the Cowboys. Listen, we all know what they had to do, right? I think even Stephen Jones, the general manager, whatever Dallas calls him, vice president. We all know that Jerry Jones is the czar there. But if Stephen Jones said it after day one, or maybe after the third round, after drafting the Awuzie, Lewis, and Taco Charlton, they're now at a net zero. They replaced all the guys they lost.
Correct. So, just my own personal opinion on the Steelers side, they ended up picking up Juju Smith-Schuster. We talked a little bit about him yesterday, wide receiver out of USC. They need some depth there, whether it's because they're worried about Martavis Bryant or they think they missed on Sammy Coates. It doesn't matter. They need a depth at the position. James Conner, they picked up him at the end of the third round on Friday night. So he's a depth back for them as D'Angelo Williams has moved on currently, free agent. Josh Dobbs is really the player of note that they picked up yesterday. The Steelers mixed it up a little bit, defense, offense, overall, actually picked the first long snapper in the draft. I don't know if there are any other ones picked after him, but into the third round, into the sixth round, they picked up a long snapper. But Josh Dobbs, an interesting kind of guy in the fourth round, 6'3", 216. He was a guy whose name seemed like it was – I guess here's the first thing I wanted to talk about with the quarterbacks in general. There are a lot of names, George, that started creeping up draft boards. Like, you could see this guy at the end of the first round, or he could sneak into the second round. And honestly, the lack of excitement about this quarterback draft class was thrown into upheaval because the three guys go on Thursday night. They go in the top 12. But by the end of the draft, we see that it really wasn't valued very much. There were only 10 quarterbacks taken, many of them late. None of them went in the second round except for Deshaun Kizer. So you saw names like Nate Peterman and Josh Dobbs and Brad Kaya. Davis Webb obviously goes to the Giants on Friday night. But really, the teams didn't value these quarterbacks very much, and they didn't jump all over each other to get them, except the three teams that felt like they really had an immediate need.
Wasn't that what we were expecting? I mean, yeah. Once again, if you want a quarterback, you have to go, go crazy to get one. And if they weren't worth it, well, then no one really cared. And people waited. We knew this was going to be a weak quarterback class, so I don't think this is any really big shock that quarterbacks weren't taking in abundance this season.
Yeah, but those late draft rumors is another example of those week leading up to the draft. Like, hey, don't be surprised if this quarterback goes in the second round. None of that was true. Kizer, it's not a shock that he went in the second round. He's a specimen of a quarterback to look at. But all the other guys, teams waited. We heard Nate Peterman could go in the second round. He goes in the fifth round. Josh Dobbs, he goes late fourth round. So in any event, I don't know that those guys are going to have any impact. It is interesting to look at Davis Webb and Josh Dobbs, but they're still probably 2 years out from at a minimum of seeing anything resembling a starting position, if at all. So we have that to take a look at here over the next few months. And now, going position by position, and I think it's always important to take a look at who went where. We'll move over to the running backs. We talked about Fournette, Dalvin Cook. We talked about Joe Mixon yesterday, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara. We had Deontay Foreman go to the Texans, who will back up Lamar Miller. And then we also talked about Kareem Hunt a little bit, who everybody wants to find this year's Jordan Howard, and we're gonna trip over ourselves trying to find it. But I think the early money is on Kareem Hunt as a guy that got picked a little bit later that has a chance to take over a job. Would you agree?
I think you're trying to troll me here, Spencer Ware, man. I'm a Spencer Ware owner. This is a killer.
I know.
I agree with you though. I think he's gonna. I mean. Running backs are always hard because when you look at them, I think we discussed this yesterday with Matt Bodica. I mean, we like Fournette and Jacksonville. We like McCaffrey in Carolina, assuming they use him. After that, it gets, okay, you got Dalvin Cook, but they just signed Murray. So what kind of system are they going to have there as far as sharing? Mixon's got Hill and Bernard, so that's a problem. Kamara's just a complete nightmare with Ingram and Peterson. How much does Sean Payton hate Ingram, by the way? You got Foreman was taken, but he's got Lamar Miller. Connor's got Le'Veon Bell. I mean, the guy I might like best maybe is Perrine. And Washington, I mean, I think he may have the best chance to get a starting job as well.
Yeah, Samaje Perine is a guy that shared carries with Joe Mixon at Oklahoma, as well as Dede Westbrook when he was doing his sort of scat back kind of thing at times. But Perine's a beast. I think he topped all the running backs on the bench press. He's just a very physical back. He was a guy that at one point carried the load for Oklahoma. He broke the all-time single-season rushing record, single-game rushing yards record, about 6 days after Melvin Gordon had broken Marshall Faulk's record. Samaje Perine broke Melvin Gordon's record, so that's one of the things he did of note. But a successful career at Oklahoma, and I do like that fit. You know, what was interesting what the Redskins did, they picked up a lot of physical players, Jonathan Allen, Samaje Perine, a few other additions that they made were really, I think, important to note, because I was watching the coverage yesterday and I thought the whoever was doing the analysis made a really good point. It was probably a reaction in some ways to what Dallas has been doing. Very physical team offensively. They needed to try to match that. And it can sometimes happen like that, where you're trying to mirror the teams or adjust to the teams in your division, and Washington picks up a bunch of physical players in this draft.
Yeah, well, I think you're seeing that with the Redskins as well. The Redskins, they're an interesting team here, because first and foremost, what's going to happen with Cousins after this season? All right, you can do whatever you want. If you don't have a quarterback, it's not going to matter. So I'm curious about that. There was even some rumors, once again, that Cousins could be traded at the draft. I understand most of these is BS. You know, someone throws it out there, everybody talks about it. But still, it's just, it's a funny situation with the Redskins. But I think they are going sort of that same direction. Most teams want to be physical, let's face it. You want to have a physical offensive line. You want to have a mean offensive line. You want to have a physical defensive line. Because games are won in the trenches. I mean, you know, we don't really talk about it as much. But offensive line, defensive line, if you can rush the quarterback, you can have a good chance to win the game. If you can control the line of scrimmage and, you know, eat up yards and keep getting those first downs, you can have a chance to win the game. You know, that's the way this game is. It's just not a sexy position. It's not one guy you need. You need four or five guys. So that's why it's hard to get that. With a quarterback, hey, you have one good quarterback, you know, it's much easier to talk about, much easier game to play.
Agreed. So as we go through the other running back additions, just to see, you know, who added whom. The Bucks end up drafting Jeremy McNichols out of Boise State in the fifth round. So I wouldn't call him a replacement for Doug Martin, but they do address the position. The Colts did as well with Marlon Mack out of South Florida. He goes to the Colts. We go down through it. Tariq Cohen to the Bears. That's depth. Obviously, Jordan Howard is the man there. Brian Hill of Wyoming to the Falcons. Again, more depth. Wayne Gallman from Clemson to the Giants. So I got to watch a lot of Gallman as I follow the ACC a little bit more closely with my school being there. By the way, BC had two players drafted, so happy for Matt Milano and John Johnson. So I would like to have seen more players being drafted, but that's another story for another day. But Wayne Gallman had a really good career at Clemson at times, George. Unfortunately, he had some injury histories, and I get really concerned with the way in which he runs, very upright. So if anybody's saying, well, could this be a guy to take over for Perkins or compliment Perkins? Yes, in some ways, but I don't really see Wayne Gallman as kind of a breakout back in the NFL. He has a lot of talent, but I just, when I watch him, I don't love his style. As you know, guys that run a little bit more upright just tend to take a beating in the NFL.
Yeah, if you're a running back, and as you said, you're running upright, I mean, you're an easy, you're a bullseye. And these linebackers are going to crush you, you know, and your shelf life will be shorter. I mean, your running back shelf life is short as it is, but if you're running upright, you're not avoiding hits. I mean, Emmitt Smith used to always say the reason why he lasted so long was that he rarely took a big hit. Yeah, he knew how to make himself small and avoid the big hits. I think it's a talent more than anything else. But if you're running upright, I mean, you're asking for trouble here.
Yeah, one last guy that I think is worth noting, because he was a name during the draft process, the run-up to the draft, is Donnell Pumphrey. Donnell Pumphrey, 5'8", 176 out of San Diego State, so he's small. But the Eagles pick him up, and the Eagles, as we know, is a team whose running back situation we're still trying to figure out, George.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny about running backs. I think this is, when you look at it, I'm looking at the list now. Just a ton of running backs taken late. I think it just shows you what teams believe nowadays. You know, everybody would love a Fournette. Everybody wants to exactly the true talents. But after that, you know, we'll just take quantity. You know, take a couple guys, see what happens. You know, maybe one of these guys will pan out. We've seen it before. And I think also in today's day and age, passing game. You don't need a great running back. Just need one that's not terrible. It also depends on your offensive line. I mean, you mentioned Wayne Gallman. Interesting back. Giants offensive line's terrible. You know, it may not matter who's there. They're not going to be able to do much. Giants got to be a passing team to win games, because that offensive line still probably the weakest part of their team, and it really wasn't. They made some moves. They got one draft pick, but they didn't make big additions to that. So I think we see that it's a different game than what you and I grew up on.
All right, George, I'm going to tease it to the next break, because we got some breaking news in the NFL. It's kind of a big deal, especially considering the timing of when it happened. We're going to talk about the Buffalo Bills right after the break. Big news coming out of Buffalo. Mike and George back in a couple of minutes.
Welcome back. Roto Experts Weekend Morning Show. I'm George Kurtz. And once again, we're talking about the NFL draft this weekend, just completed. I mean, I watched. I watched day one, of course. I watched the first round. I even watched day two. Come day three, rounds 4 to 7, and I'm not going to lie to you. It's on maybe on the TV, but I'm not really paying attention to it. I'll follow the picks more online than anything else. Certainly watch the Cowboy picks. Really, just like to see what Jerry Jones does, see if he does something silly. It looks like, as Mike and I discussed earlier, Dallas went more of a traditional route this year, didn't take many chances. So good for them, because I got tired of taking the Randy Gregorys of the world and seeing how he failed. Another test, Mike.
That's crazy. I heard it yesterday. So I'm a little – I probably pay a little bit more attention than you in the draft, but I had it sort of on my phone yesterday. I was listening on the radio as the picks rolled on to see if there's any names I recognized or see if there's any interesting impact to the depth charts. But I did hear Randy Gregory will be gone for at least a year. He'd have to apply for reinstatement a year from now. So it's a good thing that they addressed with 7 defensive players. I don't know that you have any expectations. Once a player gets into trouble several times, it's like the Steelers with Martavis Bryant. He's one failed test away from something like that happening as well. And I think you just start to lose any expectation for the players at all, right? As a fantasy owner in dynasties, you just say, hey, listen, whatever games I get is gravy, but he's not somebody to be counted on.
No, even Jerry Jones said yesterday, I don't even know what doesn't even know what this means now, as far as how long a suspension will be. He's already gone this season, so is it a lifetime ban? How indefinite? So no, it's and I think for Jerry Jones, it's a learning lesson. You know, I don't mind every now and then you take a shot. You know, see if a guy can turn his life around. But to do it over and over again, you're going to get burned. Dallas thinks they have, or Jerry Jones thinks they have some kind of great system, great support system. Yeah, not really so.
Yeah, so, and he was drafted the same, like, within weeks of the time that they signed Greg Hardy. So that was what, it put it almost an extra spotlight on Randy Gregory. But, so he was going to be out for the 2017 season anyway? I can't even remember.
Yes, yeah, because he failed the test late last year again.
All right, so, yeah, this could be 2 years. Or, as you said, it could be a lifetime ban. In any event, we teased something regarding the Bills. The Buffalo Bills have parted ways with general manager Doug Whaley, the team announced Sunday, this is from Bills owner Terry Pegula. After a thorough review of our football operations over the past several months, Kim and I informed Doug this morning that we will be moving in a new direction. We have enjoyed working with Doug. He's a good person. We want to thank him for his work and commitment to our football team. This was my decision. It was not an easy decision, but I believe it's the right one for the future of the Buffalo Bills. Our search for a new general manager will begin immediately. Now, this is a team with currently the longest playoff drought in the NFL. They haven't made a playoff game since they lost. They haven't appeared in the playoffs since they lost the Music City Miracle back in 99, right? It was the early 2000 that happened, but the 99 season. So, Doug Whaley, based on back when Rex Ryan was fired, that was a very dysfunctional situation where he said that he wasn't the one that did it, that it was the Pegulas that actually, like, Whaley wasn't even part of the phone call in which that happened. There was messy press conferences from him back then and up until now. What I find curious is that you let him run your draft process effectively, and then you get to today when it's over and decide to fire him. Now, what I don't know and what we will probably find out is if Doug Whaley really wasn't running this process at all, if it was a lead scout, if it was another person in the football operations department that really was taking over the draft and Whaley was a figurehead. But if you let him run the process and then fired him, then that's on you because you just fired a guy to run the most important offseason situation and for your entire organization. It screams of dysfunction.
You think? I mean, really?
It's unbelievable.
I mean, this is you could use so many terms here. We should have Matt Modica here because he's in Buffalo Bills and he's got to be pulling out his hair right now. I mean, this is a joke. You just don't do this sort of thing. We've seen it happen in sports before. When you for some reason you hire or fire a coach later on in the offseason. The problem is this: all the top guys are gone. You know, you got to make these hires. This is why we have Black Monday as soon as the regular season ends because you fire everybody, then you go hire the guy you want. Oh, but all those guys are gone. They've signed contracts. Teams aren't going to let those guys out of contracts now. The offseason start. They need these guys. So who are you hiring here? Is it going to be a 1-year guy? A guy who's obviously not your first choice, probably not even your first top 10 list. So this is certainly the optics here are terrible. And you mentioned, who was running the draft? Did they just fire him right after the draft? You know, hey, thanks, goodbye. You know, once if, or did, it's just strange.
Did they do an armchair analysis of this draft and say this wasn't good enough? You're out of here. I mean, the one thing I'll highlight about the Bills, they only took six players yesterday. They went 7-9. They finished third in the AFC East. They haven't made the playoffs since 99. They picked six players. Now, do you think the Bills are that close that they don't need to turn over the roster? There's other teams that have picked double-digit players. By the Jets moved back repeatedly. They had six picks yesterday, and they took three or four in the first couple of days. So teams like the Jets, like the Browns, are churning over that roster aggressively in order to get their players, I put that in air quotes, on the team. So maybe this wasn't what the owners expected. Maybe they wanted him to wheel and deal a little bit more. We like their first couple of picks, Tre'Davious White, the cornerback out of LSU, and Zay Jones. They addressed the wide receiver position, but we talked yesterday with Matt Modica, George. The Bills were sitting at 10, where there was rumors that they'd either take a quarterback and really needed a wide receiver, and they let three wide receivers get picked in front of them. So the quote-unquote big three at the wide receiver position weren't available for the Bills, so they traded back.
I don't mind trading back to get extra picks, especially as you sort of hit them before. The Bills aren't one player away. I mean, they're not going to contend this season. So I don't mind that. You know, Greg, get more picks. Because once again, you know, when it comes to draft picks, I'm always of a belief, you know, odds are most of these guys aren't going to hit. So the more picks you have, the better chance you do have of getting a couple of guys that do hit. You know, I understand maybe I don't want to trade out of my the prime picks, when you know, guys who you odds are they are going to play well. You know, but after that, it doesn't bother me to move down at all as long as the price is right, especially if the player or players you want are not there. So I don't mind doing that. But I said this whole Bills thing is just strange.
Yeah. And it is okay to move down. I don't mind moving down, and, you know, they got some value from the Chiefs. But if there was discussion with the GM, with the owner, with other guys in the organization, Sean McDermott, that, hey, we really do need a wide receiver here early. We need a big-time playmaker, and we like X, Y, and Z. We need to make sure we get one of those, and it didn't happen. Maybe that's an egregious enough situation that the general manager mishandled that they could fire him. I think obviously the Pegulas were done evaluating Whaley. They're relatively new owners, so they've decided to move on. But what my initial reaction as I'm thinking about it, George, I'll bet that the coach and the general manager were not on the same page.
Oh, it has
here.
To be. I mean, absolutely.
So McDermott had to go to the owners and say, look, he's not picking the guys I want. We're not on the same page here. We got a quarterback in the fifth round. We took a wide receiver in the second round when we specifically talked about getting Corey Davis. This is hypothetical. We specifically talked about getting Corey Davis. It doesn't happen because he doesn't make a move to trade up. We get a linebacker in the fifth round out of Boston College, who, by the way, I like him as a player, but he's not going to be a three or four down linebacker. He's a pass coverage guy and a special teamer. Maybe that's all you're looking for in the fifth round, but if they feel like they need depth at that position, then they didn't take care of it. It's the most odd timing for firing a GM. I'll go back to your point. Who are you going to get? Now, would a lot of guys that are out there in the NFL community jump at a general manager's job? Absolutely. But this is a tight league. It's a small world. And you can't. If you do that now, you are bailing on a team that you're currently employed by. And you're burning a bridge.
Absolutely.
They would not be happy about that.
Plus, how do you get out of the contract anyway?
Right.
No team's going to let you go right now. I mean, unless they don't want you, unless they want to get out of whatever contract you have with them. So, man, it's good. The optics are terrible. I mean, what was going on here? I think the situation the hypothetical is probably close. Something had to be some kind of disconnect. You know, I just don't think it makes any sense here. If you want to fire him, if you were willing to fire him after the draft, if somebody, let's say it's not draft related. Let's say it was insubordination, like you said, where he's picking player A when the GM wants player B. You know, let's say he's not doing that. Then why wasn't he fired before this? Why would you want to make in those picks if you don't want them? It just something's very strange here.
Yeah, I mean, that's as big a that's bigger news than anybody was picked. It's crazy that they're now without a GM, and it is May, what's today? April 30th. So
You got OTA starting soon. I mean, rookie camp and all this other stuff, and you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, his rookie's going to be here in a couple of weeks.
I mean, it's not as bad as I always find it interesting when, once again, this is any of the sports, when they fire their manager, head coach, a week, a month into the season. Because in my mind, if you were willing to fire someone a week or a month into the season, you probably should have fired him at the last season. You know, I mean, totally. You didn't like him anyway. So I always find that intriguing. I don't think this is quite to that level, but I'm looking forward to hearing the what the speculation is, or maybe the truth is as to why he truly got fired.
Yeah, I mean, this was just announced within the last half an hour. I saw it on NFL.com, so we're discussing it really as basically all we have right now is the statement. I'm sure there's a lot of talking heads that get some inside information. People like Schefter and Ian Rappaport and those guys will be all over it trying to find out some news. But as George, you couldn't put it any better. You probably should have fired him when you wouldn't let him talk to the coach to do that firing. I think it showed that they didn't have any confidence in him. I think Whaley really had awkward press conferences, and here we go. You know, they mismanaged the whole quarterback thing too. And ultimately they may wind up with a guy that they like, but they had the whole situation with Tyrod Taylor where they were going to put him on IR, and we wanted to make sure he could play to make sure he didn't get an injury settlement or he didn't lock in on guarantees because he was injured. Remember, they benched him at the end of the year for that last game with Anthony Lynn was the interim head coach, and yeah, he botched the press conference where he said, nah, it wasn't really my call to – we wanted Cardale in there, but Cardale wasn't even the guy that started. I just thought the whole thing was a complete mess there. It's no wonder that they haven't won or gotten to a playoff game in 17, 18 years. And I guarantee this year won't be the year that they break the streak. I just don't find this to be a team that's moving in the right direction now. New coach is all well and good, but I don't think they made themselves a markedly better football team. The one positive for them is that their first and second round draft picks last year were basically washed because they were hurt. And now they'll be back coming off of IR and getting healthier during the offseason, respectively, between Reggie Ragland and Shaq Lawson. So,
Mike, I do another show. News. We always do a top five worst organizations in sports. I think Buffalo just cracked it.
Yeah, that's a good one. Where do you guys do that show? Is it on Old School?
We used to, I guess it was the whatever we used to call Old School before that.
Got it.
We've done that, yeah. And Buffalo, actually, Buffalo may be number one right about now. Mets are always there.
The Mets are always there?
Islanders. New York.
Well, are you only picking New York area teams?
I was going to say, New York has a lot of problems. Well, just because you're a bad team doesn't mean you're a bad organization. The Mets are actually a good team, but they're a bad organization. You know, generally it's ownership on down.
Yeah, I'd have to defer to you on the hockey ones. The Sacramento Kings are horribly dysfunctional. They can't be any better than terrible because of the way they run things. So I'd put the Sacramento Kings there. I'll throw the Bills in there now. That's a good one. That's a good exercise. We'll do that one of these days, even if we're barring from another show. But I'd like to do that. So that's really the big news. I know we spent an entire segment on it, but I thought it was really important to note that the Bills just did a draft and fired their general manager the day after it concluded. It probably happened last night. So
is that a first, though? Can you remember another time where a team did this?
No. I'm actually going to be curious to see if anybody comes out today and say, well, this happened back in the 90s when this happened. But I guarantee it's been a long time since it happened. Right after the draft is incredibly bad timing. All right, folks, we'll come back. We'll talk. We'll wrap up the first hour. We'll continue to go through the draft. We'll talk about some MLB stuff as well. It's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back after this. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. You can now take the world's premier 24/7 fantasy sports radio network with you wherever you go. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes store, on Google Play, and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear Tony Sincott on the treadmill, Benny Riccardi in the car, Greg Sussman on the subway, or just relax with the king on the couch or Jake Seeley when you're jogging. We keep you updated and informed wherever you go. Get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes store, on Google Play, and take the experts with you. I would note that later today, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, which is normally on from 10 to 12 after us, is going to be preempted today. We're going to be doing another NFL draft special. That's going to be with Corey Parson, Joe Lisi, Rich Germanello. They'll recap from 10 to 12. From 12 to 1 is FanRag Fantasy Baseball with Al Melchior, and then the producers from 1 to 3. So that's the lineup for the day. George, as we continue, all right, I mean, this Bills thing kind of threw me off. I'm really just stunned by it. But
I think the NFL world as a whole is stunned by it. Like I said, you and I can't think of another time this has happened. It probably has. And it's been around too long, but nothing comes to mind where it happened. So this is strange.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually surprised they only picked 6 players. You know, if I'm looking at the Bills draft,
no, that's it. I'm not going to get on for that. Maybe they picked the players they wanted. Listen, I wouldn't trade out of a spot if there's a player there I want just to get 2 other players later. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. So I certainly wouldn't get on them for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I wonder if they made some trades. I'm going to check this during the break when we have a couple of minutes. But I want to see if they made trades to move back up into some of these rounds, because they actually got a lot for moving down with the Chiefs. I think they got a number one next year. Isn't that right? When they traded down from 10 to 27.
So
they got
a
number one
somewhere
for next year. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, frankly, how good the Chiefs are, it could be very late 20s. But I think that's a decent haul for what they got. And they do get a receiver that I assume that they like. I just wonder if there was some other picks that they traded to move up to get guys that people just weren't on board with. 3 defensive players, 3 offensive players. That's how they addressed it. 1 a developmental quarterback, 1 a guard, 1 a wide receiver.
I'm laughing because Mike Cardano tweeted out, "The Bills are more dysfunctional from the top down than the Jets, which is hard to do." He's got a point.
Oh, man. Is that true? Is that true? Well, they have a general manager, so that's good. I don't know that we feel great about Mike Maccagnan or Todd Bowles, their head coach's job security, but I think I'll give the Bills the nod. Yeah, I will do that. They hired Rex Ryan away very quickly from when the Jets fired him, which was an odd move for Rex, because he went from a team without a quarterback to a team without a quarterback. I thought they botched that firing. I'm blown away. All right, we got to turn the page in the next hour. Stop talking about the Bills, but man, they might be number one on the most dysfunctional sports organization list. It's Mike and George. We'll be back for another hour after this. After us, it's Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. Come back and join us for another hour. We're going to talk George's who's hot and who's not on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning, the show that's going to bash the Bills for the next hour. Figuring out if there's any organizations in sports that are worse. Sacramento Kings come to mind. George, you got any hockey teams that can get in the mix here?
Oh, the Islanders have to be up there. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, the Islanders are, if not the worst organization in hockey, certainly one of them.
Yeah. The Maple Leafs always have a lot of
support. But they turned it around now. They got Babcock. They got Shanahan. They're fine. They're probably one of the better run organizations now.
Yeah, now that they have some people in place. See, it just takes
That's
a
all it takes.
Guys, right,
to hire the right people. It's just not difficult.
Out. Yeah. Yeah, and in fact, I responded to Mike Cardano, who had a tweet about the Bills being dysfunctional and about how Terry Pegula is meddling too much. What I would say is that he's a relatively new owner. He's owned the team for 2.5 years officially. I think we do see this quite a bit, actually, where newer owners meddle a lot. Bob Kraft did that 20 years ago, Dan Snyder has unfortunately continued to do it, but to compare those two, Bob Kraft did it a lot. Then he hired Bill Belichick, and he's been out of the way. He does not meddle in football stuff at all. In fact, if you watch some of those Football Life documentaries, it's almost funny because Kraft is somewhat hesitant to talk to Belichick about football matters, it seems. He obviously wants to approval of certain players and hiring the right people, but he's out of the way for the most part. Dan Snyder stayed in the way for 20 years, and it's obviously not working in order to get them to be very successful. You probably have some issues with Jerry Jones where he doesn't. A lot of issues. I mean, I personally bashed Jones enough over the years that people know how I feel. You can have certain seasons of success like you had last year, but to build it long term, you should just have more experienced football people in there. Now, Stephen Jones has been in the football business for effectively 30 years, so I'm not going to bash him at all, even if he wasn't a football lifer before then. He should know what he's doing by now, and if he's got the right people in place, so be it. But, you know, he's only going to hire a coach who's a yes man. That's the real big issue with Jerry Jones.
Listen, I mean, I'm of the belief owners should own, general managers should general manage, coaches should coach, and all that. I mean, that's why you hire the people. When it comes to Jerry Jones, I mean, I applaud that he wants to win. I applaud that he'll spend any amount of money to win. George Steinbrenner was the same way. You know, I just don't like how they go about it. You know, like I said, you can't get involved. You don't know. You think you know, you don't. When did the Yankees become great? When Steinbrenner got suspended in the early 90s. That forced Gene Michael to take over. They didn't trade away all their players, and they became great. You know, Jerry Jones, when did the Cowboys become better? Well, when Stephen Jones had a more active role. Listen, if it was up to Jerry Jones, Manziel would be on the team. They wouldn't have Travis Frederick. You know, they wouldn't have Zach Martin. There's no way he would have drafted these guys. They weren't sexy picks. Johnny Manziel would be, he might still be suspended and all that, but he would have been drafted. That's the way Jerry Jones thinks. He wants to make the splash pick. That's why I wasn't kidding yesterday. When I look at the Cowboys draft, I'm looking for, what did Jerry Jones do? Did he make 8,000 trades? Well, he made a few, but nothing that was out of the ordinary. You know, did he take that player he shouldn't have taken? That's what you look at, because once again, he's not thinking like a general manager. He's thinking like an owner who wants to sell tickets.
True. So our producer, Pete Considori, sent me a quick note, George. He told me to ask you about the Sabres, which is also owned by Terry Pegula. How do you think they're run?
Oh, you know, he's got a point. That's actually I know where Pete's going with this. They just fired their head coach, too. And that came out because their top player, Jack Eichel, who's one of the better players in the NHL, he may or may not have said that, hey, I won't play under this coach. And then all of a sudden, Pegula fired the coach. It was a terrible opt. Whether the player said it or not, the agent, of course, denied it. What else is he going to say? You know, so that's terrible optics as well.
Eichel was the number two overall pick behind Connor McDavid.
Yeah, the funny thing about them, the GM, I mean, Connor McDavid, for those who don't know, Connor McDavid is the equivalent of, you know, having Aaron Rodgers first overall. Andrew Luck taking Peyton Manning over Ryan Leaf. You know, that he's that good. Jack Eichel, it wasn't a bad runner-up, solid runner-up. But not Connor McDavid is a franchise maker. You know, the Oilers might go to the Stanley Cup this season, which is unbelievable. But the general manager, when they lost the draft lottery and he realized he wasn't going to make McDavid, almost seemed to cry at the conference. I mean, Jack Eichel had to feel terrible. You're that upset about taking me? You know, he literally is almost crying there. So that couldn't have gone over well either.
Yeah. So it's a good topic. Got some content thanks to the Bills. But I want to talk about quarterbacks right after this, but really got to focus on baseball for a second with George's Who's Not and Who's Not list. We'll be back on the Roto Experts in the Morning after this. Back with a little death metal here, courtesy of Pete Considori. Weird. But whatever. It's Sunday morning. You got to get up somehow. The RotoExperts.com exclusive edge in season fantasy baseball package is your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. Stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We'll help you set the ideal lineups every week. And this season, you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. Get the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package now and start soaring to the top of the standings. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. So visit us on Twitter today, right now, because we're going to put up a poll in a second. Fantasy Sports Radio at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. It's going to be which sports organization is the most dysfunctional. We're going to give you a choice of teams up there. It's the Bills, the Kings, the Sabres, and figuring out a baseball team. I think it might be the Mets, but we're going to finalize it here in the next minute. Beyond that, I wanted to go, George. We'll turn the page over to baseball for a second. Let me do the injury updates first in baseball, which I have right here in front of me. Ian Desmond, manager Bud Black said he and Desmond, who was sidelined on March 12th with a fractured left hand, was hit by a pitch, planned to talk Saturday before the decision is made. There seems to be, and update me if this has been finalized, some momentum that he could start in left field today against the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, he looks like he's going to play first base and left field when he gets activated here. Good for him. Not good for Mark Reynolds owners. I mean, and I am one of the leagues able to pick him up, and now Desmond's back, so he's going to lose some playing time there. That's somewhat of an issue. I mean, listen, good for Desmond. Now, if I'm probably not in weekly long leagues, weekly lineup leagues, I'm probably not going to activate Desmond this week. I want to see if he can hit first. You know, let's see if that hand truly is back. When I always worry about hand injuries, is his ability to keep whipping that bat around. The power, is that going to go away? So I'll sit and watch a week first. Plus, hey, didn't Denver get like a foot of snow?
Did they?
They did, yeah. They showed pictures of the Rockies. If they were at home this weekend, it would have been a whiteout.
That's so weird. So a buddy of mine lived in Denver for like 6 years, and he said it's the weirdest weather he's ever been a part of. Like, stuff like this happens all the time where it's 75 and beautiful out, and the next day it's 27 and it snows a foot. But the thing is, the next day it goes back to 65 degrees and it melts. They don't even really have, he said, in the city of Denver, they don't really have many snow plows because typically the weather warms up and whatever snow that they get, it tends to melt very quickly because of the elevation, because of the weird climate situation they have. But when it does snow, it shuts down the whole city. People bail from work because they know the roads aren't going to be cleared, and creates massive traffic jams when things like this happen. So such a weird thing. But moving on, as you said, it complicates a few things in Colorado, but good for those of you that drafted Ian Desmond and hung on to him for this month. It's probably, I remember you and I talking when it initially happened. This is about what you expected, 6 weeks to 8 weeks, something along those lines. I guess you got to be happy if it's April, technically, even if it's the last day of April. You're probably happy with that overall. It could have been worse.
Yeah, I think you're very happy right now. I think we had the over-under probably somewhere in mid-May. And it looks like David Dahl should be back in a couple of weeks as well, so the Rockies have a full complement there. And what they're going to do with playing time then is anyone's guess. Reynolds is eventually going to lose out of this. They're not going to bench Cargo. They're not going to bench Blackman. You know, we know Desmond's going to play, so it's going to eventually be Reynolds. I think right now Reynolds is so hot. He's hit, what, 4 home runs this week? So they'd like to keep him in the lineup as long as they possibly can. No DH, though. Eventually, he's going to be the one on the bench.
Aaron Nola is on the 10-day disabled list with a strained lower back. He threw a bullpen session Friday at Dodger Stadium. And while his back reportedly felt fine during the two-inning simulation, Phillies manager Pete Mackinnon said Nola complained of the same symptoms that put him on the DL, so he's going to be reevaluated to see when he can rejoin and throw his next bullpen session. So he's not going to rejoin the team Monday at Wrigley Field, George.
Yeah, no, I'm not a shock. They're not a huge loss either. By the way, I'd be amiss if I didn't say that Corey Parson has walked into the studio. Corey looks like death.
Oh, boy.
Hungover here, Mr. Parson, but Corey has joined us.
He's doing the best he can.
Yeah, he's trying to. So I got the Yankee hat going here. That's how we got three Yankees.
He's had a rough couple of days, dude. He's had to do nighttime shows.
Oh, he's had to do nighttime shows. Oh, I feel so bad.
And morning
for you.
Shows. I was saying he and I did the show we were on the air at like 7:30. We went to almost midnight on Thursday. Then he did the morning show on Friday. Then he had to go back and do the nighttime show on Friday. So he had a night off last night, but he's in doing the morning show again. The guy hasn't had a day off in a while. So I'll give him a pass here. And if he can get through the next 2 hours with Joe Lisi and Rich Germanello and do the NFL draft recap show, then I think he'll be back in business.
Are Joe and Rich coming in also, Corey? Okay, Joe, yes, Rich, no.
Yeah, listen, I could barely hear Corey, but what I heard didn't sound very good. So
Corey needs some coffee. He needs some caffeine. I think he's searching for it, too. He's looking out the studio. Yeah, I'm sure that's what he's searching for. The talent's not good today, Corey. It's been a bust.
Travis Shaw left Saturday's game against the Braves with a right hand contusion, replaced in the fifth inning by pinch hitter Jesus Aguiar. Travis Shaw, 256, 5 homers, 18 RBIs on the season. Got hit by a pitch. He stayed in the game, so I don't know that there's going to be too much here, and I don't know how much Travis Shaw comes into play unless you're in deeper leagues, but you know he's got 5 homers on the season. It's been a decent month for him.
Well, you said it. 5 home runs on the season. He's been a pickup. He's been a waiver wire pickup. You ride the hot guy. You start him for a week or two. When he slows down, you move on. Shaw did the same thing last year at Boston. You know, had a good, really good first 2 months till he trailed off, and that's fine. Yeah, you just have to, the hard part is knowing what Kenny Wright to say, knowing when to fold him, when to move on. Maybe this hit by pitch makes that a little quicker. Steven Souza also got hit yesterday and got hit right, looked like right in the fingers while he was holding the bat. That may not be good either.
That's a rough one. Souza obviously displaying a lot of power. AJ Griffin, I feel like we talked about him a bunch during the preseason, but give me your thoughts on what your expectations are when he comes back. They haven't made a decision as to whether or not he's going to come off the disabled list and start Wednesday against the Astros, but he's back with the team. He threw a rehab assignment for AAA Round Rock for the Rangers, and he started off the season okay. In 15 innings pitched, he picked up 2 wins, 4 walks, 16 Ks, kept the whip down. But what were your expectations for A.J. Griffin, and are you excited that, or should owners be excited that he's going to be coming back off the DL potentially fairly soon?
What were my expectations for A.J. Griffin? I don't think I cared. Certainly not in 10 or 12 team leagues. In deeper leagues, sure, AL only, yeah, absolutely. But I wasn't all that concerned. He wasn't on my, anywhere near my top 60 pitchers. He's pitching well now. It's still 4.11 ERA. The whip is great at 0.85, but those numbers are all going to go up. You know, he's nobody to get excited about. Just he's a guy who's pitching well now. And it's not a prospect. He's 29 years old. You know, he's been with Oakland, been with Texas. He's somebody, if he had a 2-start that week, yeah, I might put him in there depending on what the starts are against because he's hot now and I'll take him. But I'm going to be very wary of where he's pitching and who against whom. Because I wouldn't want him in Texas all of a sudden against the Yankees the way they're hitting right now. Or what's another good hitting team? Hell, the White Sox are beating the hell out of people right now. I'll pass. I think the ERA is going to be not what you want.
On the A's front, which this says a lot about the A's, Sonny Gray, who's been on the season, been on the DL since the season began due to a strained right lat muscle, was impressive in Thursday's rehab outing for AAA Nashville, issuing no walks and 7 strikeouts over 6 scoreless innings. He recovered fine and is on target to start Tuesday on regular rest, so that's good, following the team's off day. The left-handed Sean Manea, he played catch with Sean Manea. That's I buried the lead there. The left-handed Manea, who is experiencing tightness in his throwing shoulder, played catch on Saturday out to 120 feet. Kendall Graven will start on Wednesday. Melvin has not named a starter for Thursday, but he said Manea will not make it. So one player continues to struggle a little bit coming back from injury, and Sonny Gray looks like he's poised to start.
Yeah, he's going to be another person I'm going to be very, very careful with. Listen, last year was a bust. You know, with the injury, he wasn't pitching very well. Then this year it happened again. He's someone if he's available on your waiver wire, we probably all need pitching. I wouldn't mind picking him up, but I'm not starting him this week. I'm going to need to see at least one start, maybe even two, before I start buying on the Sonny Gray bandwagon again. It's been over a year since he's pitched well. Yeah, I don't know if this is all injury-related or is he taking a decline in his talent there. So I'm going to be very careful before all of a sudden put Sonny Gray back in my lineup.
Real quick to get through the last few guys. Tyler Skaggs from the Angels going on the 10-day DL. Brandon Crawford shifted from the bereavement list to the 10-day DL with a right groin strain. CJ Krohn, 10-day disabled list after he fouled a ball off his left foot Friday against the Rangers. Hopefully it's just 10 days. And Shelby Miller, George, strained flexor tendon and a partial tear of his ulnar collateral ligament. He's undergoing Tommy John surgery, so we're basically looking at 2019 for Shelby Miller.
Yeah, he's done. UCLL. He wasn't paying. I had trouble last year. Hopefully he comes back to full health.
So David Freese also on the 10-day DL. We'll come back. We'll talk who's not with George. Mike and George back after this. Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Mike and George here until 10, when Joe Lisi and Rich Chamberlain join Corey Parson to do an NFL draft recap. They'll take you from the fourth round through the seventh round. Those 10 quarterbacks taking all those running backs that went off the board, the receivers as well, which I'll try to get to before the end of the show if we can, but still a lot to talk about. Also saw another piece of news on Twitter, which I thought was interesting as well. A poll is up, so go to FNTSY Radio on Twitter. Which sports organization has the most issues? The Buffalo Bills, the Sacramento Kings, the Buffalo Sabres, or the New York Mets? Now, I understand that's not taking every team into account, but I wanted to pick one from each sport. So it's my poll. I do it how I want. If you guys want to fire back any other teams at us, I'm sure we'll be open to talking about how much certain teams stink. So, George, you know what's funny? I was going to try and update on a couple of injury issues and then move over to your article, but there's so many damn injuries right now. I can't even get through it in a 12-minute segment. Steven Souza, as you said, got hit. Johnny Peralta is looking towards May 8th to 10th in that range. David Price, he threw 30 pitches. Light bullpen session tomorrow. Then hitters on Thursday, ramping up to 45 pitches. There's still zero timetable for him. James Shields, looks like he's on the DL retroactive to April 18th. It's the first DL stint of his very durable 12-year career. Guy puts in a ton of innings and all that kind of stuff. But it's just amazing. I feel like that's the story of the baseball season so far. Forget how good a couple of guys are, and Eric Thames and Aaron Judge and all that kind of stuff. But the DL has just been incredible. And there's no way for me to tell you without doing any research whether there's more DL stints this year. It just seems like it, because now that the 10-day DL is being utilized in the way that it is, guys are on the DL all the time right now.
I think we're seeing teams massage the 10-day DL. I think it's I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, not for Major League Baseball. It's bad for us fantasy owners. I mean, God. There is a fantasy team or two that I have 10 guys on the DL. And it's just going bananas. Teams are not taking any chance. It's 10 days. He's going to be out 3-4 days anyway. What's an extra 3-4 days? You know, I understand the math doesn't work out, folks, so I don't want to hear about it. But, why not? You know, just keep him out there. I didn't want anyone to think it's, he doesn't know 6 to 8, it's not 10. I get it. I get why teams are doing it, and I applaud them for it. We've seen it before. Teams want to protect their assets, right? They're paying these guys a gazillion dollars. So why not? You know, it's 10 days. It's April. I think this will change as the season wears on. You know, in August, I don't know if these guys are going on the deal. Because all of a sudden, that extra 4 or 5 games, that means something more in August than it does in April. So I think that could change as well. But for right now, yeah, it's difficult. It's forcing us to go to our waiver wire. You know, to really search the waiver wire, hope what you can find. There's a league where I can't pick up a corner infield. There's no one left. And I'm desperate for one.
Yeah.
You know, so you're really hoping if you have injuries, just not to get them all at the same position.
Yeah, it's just I would sit here and complain about my injury issues that I've had, but I feel like everybody else is the same thing. I had Gene Segura on the 10-day DL. Now I got Mitch Haniger on the 10-day DL, and that's probably going to be a lot worse than that. Zach Britton, I currently have active because I can't cut him or Cam Bedrosian. They're both on the DL. I got no closers right now except K-Rod, who stinks, but at least he's picking up saves. His ER is 6.2. You've got to be kidding me. So I hear what you're saying about trying to get to the waiver wire, but I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place. I only have the one DL spot, and it's got to go to Haniger because of the long-term implications there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been strange. And maybe, like I said, I think this will change as the season goes along. I think we'll be okay. I think teams won't use it as much because, like, they want these guys to play. I mean, a lot of the injuries we're talking about, I mean, it's really only the star players, right? And we're getting some of them back this week. Now, Miguel Cabrera should be back on Tuesday. So he will get guys back quicker than we normally do as well. I think teams are feeling it out. You know, I said, overall, I think this is a good thing for Major League Baseball, because wasn't it frustrating as a fantasy owner too, though, when the guy wouldn't even go on with DL, but he'd be out 8 days and you couldn't replace him? You know, you didn't get that little DL mark next to your other guy. So that was frustrating as well.
Yeah. So let's get to your article here. Let's see if first I'm going to go who's not first to see if you got, see if you helped anybody
I think
out.
I was good this week.
You were.
That's the article, not helping people.
Well, Machado went off on Friday night. You put him on the who's not list.
Well, but I was making a point there. You got to read these things, Mike. That's because I heard of a trade. Yeah. Guys are trading Machado away.
Yeah, it's crazy. He was in a well-known league. Machado was traded for Kyle Seager. You like both of them, obviously, but no way does Kyle Seager's value match Manny Machado's over the course of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's April. I know it. Right? It's still April. Yeah, it's April. So people need this. You know, let's not panic here and start getting rid of our stars. Yes, Machado's got up to a slow start, no doubt. Yeah, well, let's relax. I mean, he'll be fine. It's still April. It's been cold here in the Northeast, so the weather hasn't warmed up. He'll be fine. You know, let's face it. I really don't care what Machado did in April anymore. It doesn't matter. I only care what he's going to do from this point forward. So I'm okay with that. I'm not trading my stars. Not yet. Like I said, pretty much, I think I wrote this in the column too. May 1st is my first checkpoint. Okay, I'm going to look at my players, look at my team. What do I need? What am I struggling in? That doesn't mean I'm going to make major corrections right now or major changes. But now I'll look at it. Now someone like Machado will be on my radar. Okay, he's not playing very well. Talk to me on Memorial Day. If he's still not playing well, then we have a bigger problem.
Yeah, one other guy on this list that's impacting me is Eric Hosmer. It's killing me because my team, I thought going into the season, I thought the one area where I could struggle a bit was batting average. So I drafted Hosmer in order to help with that a little bit later in my draft, and he's making it even worse. Eric Hosmer, one homer, 6 ribbies right now, .224 batting average. So it's actually come up a little bit in the last week, but that says a lot about how cold he was.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Eric Hosmer. It's strange. He had a great WBC or a very good WBC, right? Was on fire there playing well. And what's because he just lost the adrenaline going to the regular season? Is that what it is? You know, I understand. And I get that in a way, but it's been a month. I mean, Hosmer was never going to be the player we thought he was going to be when he first got called up. Yeah, he's just not that kind of player. Maybe he will be with a different organization, and I do wonder, Mike, if he gets traded. I think the Royals are going to have somewhat of a fire sale. And it's the way the Royals, the Rays, teams like this is the way they have to operate. They can't afford these guys once they hit the arbitration, one free agency, so they move on. And I wonder if Haas will be one of those players if they can get a good enough return. But how good can that return be right now when he's not playing well?
Yeah, I mean, he's got 7 hits in the last 4 games, so maybe there's a bright spot. But, dude, he's got 1 RBI since the middle of April. 1
That's RBI. Not good.
It's incredible. I mean, I understand that the Royals aren't that good, but you got to be kidding me. This guy's hitting in the middle of the lineup. He's got 1 RBI in weeks, so he's killing me. I like him a lot as a player. This has got to be just a blip on the radar. I think he's too much of a, as you said, maybe he's never gonna be the talent that we anticipated, but he's too good of a hitter to just be flailing at .224 and not driving in runs. It's got to get a little bit better. So you put Cole Calhoun on here. Prior to this year, he had hit 61 homers over his previous 3 seasons. He has 1 right now. His average is nosedived. He's batting .227 heading into Friday. So
he seems to be breaking out of it somewhat.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe,
I hope Hosmer and Calhoun, maybe you did jinx them positively.
Well, yeah, he's breaking out of as far as hits. All of a sudden, he's got 7 hits. Oh, actually, he's got 9 hits in his last 6 games, but no home runs, so the power's still not there. And as you said, only 2 RBIs over that span, so we'd certainly like to see more than that. But, hey, hits are hits, so maybe, once again, getting that confidence back, making contact, maybe the home runs will come. And, once again, warmer weather would certainly help there as well. We all know in Anaheim, Los Angeles, the ball doesn't carry as well, especially at night, so that certainly couldn't hurt there. But like I said, there are some positive signs with Calhoun.
Robert Gesellman was never going to be like Thor or DeGrom or Harvey or Wheeler. He said he didn't think he was going to be a star, but he thought he found a late round gem. And I think, gosh, Matt Modica, I think, got Gesellman for a buck or two in one of his auctions. None of it's working out right now. He's got issues. The Mets have issues. By the way, do you think that Friday night win against the Nats, the big comeback win, do you think that was a little bit of a season saver and helped them possibly halt some really negative momentum?
I think what the Mets have done this weekend has been pretty incredible. You think about it. They've been terrible, right? They were falling off the ledge. They were done. Spetta's on the DL. They have several other guys on the DL. They were facing Scherzer and Strasburg, back-to-back games. Won both. Think about that.
Yep.
I don't want to say a season saver in April, but it might have saved Terry Collins' job because he was flipping out, saying some weird things in those press conferences. And you had to wonder if he was pushing some wrong buttons there. You know, so I thought it was interesting there. And that getting swept by Washington again this weekend would have been disastrous. So it saved some headaches for the Mets.
Yeah, and look, that was a come-from-behind victory on Friday night. It wasn't a come-from-behind victory, but it was on the precipice of blowing up. They had a Yank Familia in the ninth, right? And they got Bryce Harper to ground into a 6-4-3 double play to get out of it. So Mets fans are sweating it, and I'm sure Terry Collins got the biggest sweat of all. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Were you going to say something?
I didn't say anything.
Okay. Okay. Sorry.
I will.
Gregory Polanco, Pittsburgh Pirates, suffered a shoulder injury during the WBC, and though it hasn't cost him much playing time, it does seem to be lingering. He hasn't hit a homer yet, George.
Yeah, and once again, I think you're, that's what it is. Got to be a shoulder from WBC that's sapping some power. This is what we worry about, right? Shoulder injuries, you can't drive the ball. You know, when Michael Brantley was coming back, this was one of the problems. That's what we're worried about. Couldn't drive the ball. So, yeah, I'm worried here. What are you going to do? I'll take him out of my lineup. I'm not releasing him. Can't trade him. So right now, you're just going to have to put him on your bench until he starts to hit. But with baseball, you truly never get enough rest. Maybe this is something that lingers the entire season. So if you do put him on the market, maybe you find someone that believes. Maybe Corey Parsons believes. So I can trade Corey Gregory Polanco, and he'll give me 80 cents on the dollar. I might do that deal.
Sure. Yeah.
Even Corey said, sure, so deal's done. Hit accept.
Yeah. Chris Owings, going over to the Who's Hot side, Chris Owings has been a guy that's talked about a bunch on Roto Experts. He's got four homers in April. He only had five all of last season and 437 at-bats. He's slugging .550. I don't know that we'd expect things like this to stay on this pace over the course of the season, but as you say here, coming into the season, you would have been happy if Owings went 10-20 with a .280 average. Now those expectations are already above where they should be.
Yeah, I mean, we all have expectations. I don't want to panic yet. That's the bottom line here. That was the bottom line of the column. I'm not panicking yet, but it's not the first week anymore either. Like I said, May 1st, first checkpoint.
Got it. We'll wrap up George's Who's Hot after this. Wrap up with some NFL draft stuff. Mike and George back after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. 20 minutes from now, Corey Parson takes over with Joe Lisi and Rich Cirminello. They're going to do an NFL draft recap, recapping the entirety of the draft and maybe taking a look at how it impacts teams, but more importantly, going over rounds 4-7, which occurred yesterday, through the majority of the day yesterday. Philadelphia broke NFL draft record attendances, which there's really only one record to break, and that's what happened in Chicago. The New York draft used to take place in a relatively small theater in Madison Square Garden. So this thing's going to move around, George. It looks like it's going to be in Dallas next year, and it's going to be a barnstorming show for the NFL draft. What do you think of that? Are you not impacted by it at all, or do you think it's kind of a cool thing?
I think it's kind of a cool thing. I don't really care one way or the other. It's like, it's true. I mean, it could be back at Radio City. It could be at the Garden, Chicago. I mean, Philadelphia was great. The energy there had to be fantastic. I mentioned how much I love the Drew Pearson thing, which I thought was just the funniest thing ever. But I think that was
my favorite
great
moment of the draft.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if anybody hasn't seen this, I mean, just go. I mean, Drew Pearson's a former Cowboy. The Eagles fans obviously hate the Cowboys. Eagles fans pretty much hate everybody, but certainly hate the Cowboys more than anything else. And Drew Pearson just fed off the hate. It's a one-minute video to hear what he had to say. I think I know the whole speech by heart, but it's just fantastic.
It's really good. I loved it. I thought he did a great job. He's giving it back to the Philly fans. And, look, it's all in good fun. Do the Philadelphia Eagles fan base have a really obnoxious reputation? They do.
It's well earned.
The reality is, I think they had a lot of fun with it, and Pearson had fun with it. He was smiling as he was doing it, naming the number of rings that the Cowboys have, thanking the Philly fans for him having a successful career.
But that's the way it should be. That's what sports should be. Your fans totally boo, agree. And you feed off to it, and everybody gets all in. There shouldn't be any fights afterwards. You know, anybody beating the crap out of each other. It's just sports. But I had no problem with the fans booing. I had no problem with Drew Pearson. I just thought it was great. Great entertainment. It was fun. Like I said, Pearson had the biggest smile on his face ever doing it. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, we had the poll up yesterday. What was your favorite NFL draft moment so far? And Drew Pearson won going away. So good stuff there. I'll just real quick, George, get to a couple other Who's Hot players. Lance Lynn, you just said in the article, nobody really knew what to do at Lance Lynn at draft time. You were taking a chance because he missed all of last year after Tommy John surgery. You had no expectations. You didn't know what his innings pitch were going to be or what kind of limitations have been on. But you say you're a buyer right now.
I am. I think you have to. He's pitching fantastic, right? Maybe the only Cardinals pitcher that really is. That's a struggling team right now. So I think you have to be right now. Am I worried, Mike, that later on this season, an innings limit, pitch limit? Yeah, you have to be. You have to win his first season back. Will he get tired? You know, will he be able to go 200 innings or is it 175 innings? He's a veteran, so he's not a kid. This is not Zach Wheeler coming back. They're going to baby him. But I'm still going to have these same worries. But right now, I'm buying.
Yeah, he's 29 years of age. He's 3-1 right now with a 2.45, 25 strikeouts in 29 innings, whip under 1.1. So you got to feel good about Lance Lynn right now. But what we talk about all the time, George, it's okay if he's got an innings limit and you have that expectation. You're going to need to piece these teams together on some level. You can't draft it, set it, and forget it unless you get really lucky. You're going to piece it together, and why not piece it together with Lance Lynn for 2-3 months before you have to have somebody take it over on the back end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to guys like this, Lynn or any of these other guys, rookies or that limits, I don't want to have 3 or 4 of them on my team. But you know what? If I do, I'll worry about the playoffs and the end of the season when the playoffs and the end of the season come. You know, I got to get there first. You know, I got to set my team up. I can make moves during the season to fix that or make my trades. But if you have 3, 4, 5 of these guys, that's a lot of guys you're gonna have to move around.
Yeah, I'll give you a shot at one more player here. You got Mark Reynolds on here, Ivan Nova on here, James Paxton. I wanted to talk to you about Paxton because he's a guy that you wish you had more shares of on your fantasy teams. He had one hiccup, but he bounced back quite well. So James Paxton, a guy that's really pitching well.
Yeah, I thought that was and I really was curious. When he had the one bad out and gave up the 5 runs, I think it was against Oakland, I was like, all right. You know, younger pitcher, is he going to be able to bounce back? Is this going to be on his mind now when he's going to struggle? And he bounced back great. And when he had 7 in shutout innings there, good to see that. I really do wish I had more shares of Paxton. Now, he's another guy I might worry as the season moves on, you know, as those that innings, he's at the 120, 140, 150 innings. Is he still going to have the same stuff? You know, I would certainly worry about that. But he's another guy I truly wish I had more shares of.
Yeah, James Paxton's numbers right now, 3-0, 1.39. 39 strikeouts in 32 innings with the whip well under 1. So really impressive so far. He was a fourth-round draft pick in 2010. I would say that you can take a look at George's article and many other articles concerning baseball and football as we take apart the draft here in the next couple of weeks. You can now take the world's premier, well, first let me do this one, which is the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package. It's your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. Stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We're going to help you set ideal lineups every week. And this season, you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor, powered by InsideInjuries.com. Get the RotoExperts.com exclusive edge in-season fantasy baseball package now and start soaring to the top of the standings. Enter promo code FREERADIO for a special discount. So feel free again to go to our Twitter poll at FNTSY Radio, which is the most effectively, which is the most dysfunctional organization in sports. I phrased it, which sports organization had the most issues? The Bills, the Kings, the Sabres, and the Mets. The Bills out to a lead, although the Kings are a close second. I voted for the Kings, but you can convince me on
the Bills are
going to
win because it just happened.
Yeah, of course. There's usually a recency bias, right? A very overused term, but true in this instance. So I saw something that Mike Cardano retweeted from J.J. Zacharias, and he's at late round QB, really good DFS guy and pretty smart guy. But he tweeted out something. Is if his research is correct, this is the list of QBs that teams have traded up to select in the first round since 2000. Now, George, you can give me your your NFL opinion or your fantasy opinion on all this, but listen to this list. Go back. We're starting with Michael Vick in 2001. He was traded up for the Falcons, traded up to get him. I'm gonna just rattle them off. Let me know when you find a good player. Kyle Bowler, J.P. Lossman, Jason Campbell, Jay Cutler, Joe Flacco, Mark Sanchez, Josh Freeman, Tim Tebow, Blaine Gabbert, Robert Griffin III, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Paxton Lynch, Mitch Trubisky, Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson. Obviously, jury is out on those last six, Goff, Wentz, Lynch, Trubisky, Mahomes, and Watson. But outside of that, nobody really of any kind of fantasy relevance other than an occasional big season from Jay Cutler, one from RG3, and if you're in two QB leagues, Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco probably, of everybody I named, Joe Flacco is the best player from an NFL standpoint. Michael Vick probably had a higher high statistically. He was obviously fantasy relevant at times. Flacco, though, proving to have the best career out of all those players.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone's considering him a great quarterback either. Cutler had all the tools, but not the head. Cutler's really the slightly better Jeff George when you think about that. I mean, Wentz, I guess, might have been the next person I think might have what it takes. And he's certainly got the better weapons this season to take advantage. So he might be the next great hope in this scenario.
Yeah, we had Kevin Walsh on the show with us yesterday, who's an Eagles fan. He did a nice job guesting with us yesterday. The one thing I did say is I am not bashing Wentz at all. I'm just saying I think people are remembering last season as being an overwhelming success for Wentz. And if you take a look at some of the, when you drill down statistically, there was a lot of throws that were very close to the line of scrimmage as the season progressed. So they got on a nice winning streak early, but, you know, the team didn't perform that great down the stretch. And what I like is that he's got a head coach that is a former quarterback in the league. He's could be a little bit of a QB whisperer and can get Wentz on the right track long term. As a rookie, I'm not going to pick him apart that much, but I just would be mindful that I don't think Philly necessarily hit a home run. At least it's not cast in stone that they hit a home run. We have to see more from him for me to accurately judge him.
I agree. I think Wentz is somebody who struggled in the second half of last season. I think teams saw a film on him, figured out what he could do well, what he couldn't do well, and he had to make adjustments. What he did in the offseason will probably go a long way towards determining how well he will do this season. But like I said, giving him Jeffrey, you know, say what you want about Torrey Smith. He'll take the safeties out of the equation here. Jeffrey gives him a more reliable pass target. Jordan Matthews out of the slot. Running game's still an issue there. And as Kevin Walsh said yesterday, having Lane Johnson back all season should help as well.
Yeah, it should. That's a big deal there. We tend to glance over it at times in fantasy sports, but the addition of a lockdown defensive tackle or offensive tackle will be really important for them. As far as their additions in the offseason, they did add Jeffrey, as you said. They drafted Mac Hollins yesterday, another wide receiver. They have Matthews there. They added Torrey Smith. They have Zach Ertz there. They added a mid-round pick, Danelle Pumphrey, who I talked about earlier, a really productive guy, could be great in a scat back returner role? Is he the guy that takes over for Darren Sproles at some point? It's a contract year for Sproles. I think that's something important to note. But they really went heavy defense in the draft yesterday. Their first three picks were defense. They went with three different – Shelton Gibson, a wide receiver out of West Virginia. Two wide receivers they picked are kind of small – I'm sorry. He's another small player, relatively small player, 5'11", 191. He can jump out of the gym, but didn't run a big 40 time. But they focused mainly on defense, obviously because they made some additions during the offseason, George, offensively. But – you know, putting those weapons around Wentz, I think we saw that as a theme throughout the draft these past couple of days. It's really important for these general managers to get their quarterbacks that they like weapons around them.
Yeah, you think? You need these folks to have confidence, especially the younger ones. They need weapons. They're not going to make players better by themselves coming right out of college or first, second year. They're just not. You know, it takes time before you can become a Brett Favre or an Aaron Rodgers, so you can make players better around you just by being you. So you have to have their weapons. It's where they have confidence. This is why we like to say over and over again, what does a young quarterback generally like? A tight end, because that big target that's close to the line of scrimmage, over the middle. Yeah, it's easy to find. The tight end can be a quarterback's best friend. An outside wide receiver is nice, but it might take a while for that chemistry truly to take off there. There's so much that goes into it. I mean, offensive line plays a part. How much time do they have to throw? You know, they're going to have 3.5, 4 seconds, or is it 2.5, 3 seconds? You know, so like so much goes into it. But, yeah, weapons are extremely important. Running game is nice as well.
I mean, that's a wide receiver room that's almost set, George. You have Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, Jordan Matthews, Nelson Aguilar, who's probably the one guy looking over his shoulder, but he was just a first-round draft pick 2 years ago. I don't know that they'd outright cut him. Dorial Green-Beckham. Is there, and they drafted two wide receivers yesterday. So that one's kind of set in stone. You got 6-7 wide receivers there. That could be good to go already. But, yeah, how crazy is that list that they came up with of all the teams that traded up to take those QBs? Effectively, all of them had to move on from those guys at some point and trade them away or figure out part two.
But isn't that the NFL? You have to try in the NFL. You have to. You have to go for these guys. Yeah. Some of them might hit. I mean, it's just such a quarterback driven league that you just have no choice.
Yeah, you know, the one other team that I want to talk about, every time I search for them, I keep searching for San Diego Chargers, and it's going to take me a while to get it right. But the Chargers really did a lot in order to get Phil Rivers' weapons. You know, they got Mike Williams here early in the first round. Keenan Allen's going to be coming back. They obviously have Tyrell Williams there. Dontrell Inman is a depth guy. Travis Benjamin is a depth guy. That's another wide receiving core that's pretty loaded. And between Hunter Henry and Antonio Gates there, Melvin Gordon, I think San Diego did a really nice job of getting Phil Rivers' weapons. They know that window is closing, and it's going to be up to them to figure out the best way to try to win games, which in many instances will probably be trying to put up as many points as possible.
That's always the name of the game, right? It's funny you mentioned the Chargers thing. I'm doing Old School Fantasy with Corey and Matt earlier in the week, and we're talking about the Chargers. I'm even saying Los Angeles Chargers, yet I'm on a site, and what am I looking for? San Diego Chargers to look at the roster.
Yeah. Can't get it right.
It's going to take some time.
Yeah. They took two offensive linemen, too. Two guards to help protect Phil Rivers, finally. All right, we got one more segment to go before we hand it over to Corey, Joe, and Rich. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back to close it out. Back with some sort of weird techno situation that Pete's got going on. In any event, this is our last segment wrapping up. Corey, Joe, and Rich taking over to do the NFL draft recap. After that, it's Al Melchior with FanRag Fantasy Baseball. And then after that, it is the producers. And you can now take the world's premiere 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network with you wherever you go. Download the FNTSY Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear Tony Cincotta on the treadmill, Benny Riccardi in the car, or Greg Sussman on the subway. Just relax with the king on the couch, or Jake Seeley when you're jogging. We can keep you informed and updated wherever you go. Get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store or on Google Play, and take the experts with you. You can listen to our show live. You can listen to it on demand, as you can with any show on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Happy to join you, whether you are on the treadmill, whether you're driving and listening in on an earphone, whether you're that's kind of typically the way I listen to it in the mornings. I got the app downloaded, and I'm listening to Tony and Scott and yourself and Corey and the whole crew and Sussman and everybody. So I encourage everybody to listen to it. The content has gotten better and better with each month that we've been launched. And we're really looking forward to 2017 being a big year. So it's exciting to be a part of it, George. And obviously our content is growing. As I could really tell, you know, it's like a seminal moment for me. On Thursday night, we did this draft coverage, and it was a big party, and we had Leonard Williams there, and it was a lot of fun to watch. Hopefully you see on YouTube, on our Fantasy Sports Network channel on YouTube. It's fun. You know, it's been fun to be a part of this as it continues to grow.
Absolutely. I think it's getting bigger and bigger here, especially as football season comes around. We all know that's where the most fantasy players play, but it's always good to see fantasy. Hey, it's fun to play.
Yeah. I think you and I will continue to take a look at the draft next weekend. We'll be here Saturday and Sunday. Matt Modica joins us every Saturday from 8 to 10. The show previously was 7 to 10. We moved back to 8 to 10 for now. There's always a lot of changes going on, so just stick with us. You can always hear us on demand. Any last thoughts on the draft, George? Anything that we might have missed? I was trying to look through wide receivers to see any impacts as we went through, but you know, a few teams were heavily impacted. We talked about the Chargers. We talked about the Bucks yesterday. Talked a little bit about the Eagles today. Any last thoughts on the draft? Were maybe teams that they missed out? You know, we bashed the Bills enough this morning. Any teams that may have missed out on some opportunities?
I'm glad it's over. Now maybe I can get some sleep.
I'm with you on that. I think I did the show yesterday in about 2 hours of sleep, so happy to be able to take it down a notch here for the next couple of days. But we'll parse these teams apart, figure it out, doing some draft grades, take those teams apart. It's good times on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Again, it's Corey, Rich, and Joe doing the NFL draft recap on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Enjoy the day. Thanks for listening, folks. Talk to you soon.